Dr. Dennis Gottfried has written about obesity and much more. He's got a book that I talked to him about when it first came out a couple of years ago called Too Much Medicine. The subtitle is A Doctor's Prescription for Better and More Affordable Healthcare. And now he's written about obesity and overeating in a new blog post that he's posted on the Huffington Post. And so I've asked him to join me here today. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Hi. Thank you very much for having me, Paul.
It's always a pleasure talking to you. What do you think of this new report on obesity, which, by the way, says that this state, Missouri, is one of the 9 fattest states in America?
Yes. I agree with you. The number's a little low. The numbers I usually are quoted for obesity is about 30%. The way you determine obesity is by your body mass index. This is your weight in kilograms divided by your height in meters squared. A normal person's supposed to be under 25, a number under 25. Obese is above 30. Overweight is above 25. And in fact, 68% of Americans are overweight, 30% obese. We're the fattest country in the world. The next heaviest country, using the number 30% obesity rate, next highest country in the world is Mexico. They're 23%. And most of the European countries are about 15% obese. So we have an enormous problem in America with obesity. It is a tremendously sensitive issue. And I actually don't agree with using the word fat. It's more of a pejorative sense. This is a clinical problem. It's a medical problem. It affects the cost of health care. It affects the cost of our citizens. And it really is basically the main reason we have a diabetes epidemic at the same time.
Now, you say in your Huffington Post piece that we should attack obesity the way we waged war against cigarettes.
Yes. Cigarettes, when I was young, we would give relatives packs of cigarettes or cartons of cigarettes for Father's Day or their birthday. It was considered a choice. Some people smoked, some people didn't smoke. Now it's become more of a moral decision. Most people who smoke realize it's a harmful habit. We've exiled cigarette smokers. We've made them go to smoking designated areas. And people who smoke willingly understand that they're going to not be able to smoke around other people. And this pressure we've done, we've taxed cigarettes. So the pressure we've done on laid to bear on smokers result in fewer people smoking. It's had a beneficial effect, and as a result, fewer people are getting the problems of cigarette smoking, heart disease and cancers that are caused by cigarettes. So I think it's been an effective war on cigarette smoking. I think we need to have some kind of national policy about eating and unhealthy eating habits. And this is meeting a lot more resistance. I know the blog I wrote on obesity and obesity epidemics and obesity networks has met with a lot of resistance and a lot of accusations that I'm you're prejudiced against people who are overweight, which is indeed not the fact. It's a problem, and we have to address the problem scientifically and rationally.
Now, you say in your piece that we are weight interdependent. You know, when you talk about smoking, not only is the smoker putting himself at risk, but if they smoke next to me, I got to be exposed to that foul stench they're putting off, and I got to inhale that, and we got to worry about secondhand smoke and the cancer risk from that. And, not only that, I go home smelling like their smoke, which is going to be offensive to me personally later on. But if somebody next to me is eating a big sloppy cheeseburger and fries, how does that affect me?
Well, there's two issues here. One is the issue of secondhand smoke, and I certainly am opposed to anybody smoking, but there's a large study done in part of the Framingham study looked at spouses of smokers, and spouses of smokers followed over 30 years. They followed almost 40,000 spouses, had no increased incidence of heart disease, no increased incidence of cancer, had more episodes of bronchitis. The smoke irritates them. So none of us want to be around smokers, and we don't want to be because we don't want the smell, and it's distasteful and unappealing. But the real medical risk of having somebody work with you and smoke is not that great. But the result of exiling smokers and making them go smoking designated areas is it's more difficult for them to smoke and fewer people smoke. In fact, the risk of having people around you eating badly is greater. They've done studies looking at networks, obesity networks, and they follow people for long periods of time. This was also done in Framingham, Massachusetts, and they found that over time, if your spouse becomes obese, if your neighbor becomes obese, if your good friend becomes obese, it doubles your chances of becoming obese. If your spouse's brother becomes obese, it increases your chance. If your spouse's brother's neighbor becomes obese, it increases your chance. It goes out to 4 degrees of separation,
wow,
increasing your risk of getting obese.
Now, how does that work?
Well, because we share behavior with friends and neighbors and spouses. We tend to eat together. We tend to eat similarly. We share snacks. We share activity patterns or inactivity patterns. And if you think in your own personal life, you know that people who marry obese people tend to gain weight. People whose relatives become obese tend to gain weight. And it's not necessarily a genetic factor, because as we've shown, the incidence of people who share our genes, who live in different countries, their chance of being obese is half of ours. Well, it's mostly behavior and eating patterns that cause this. And this is these are obesity networks. It was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it's well substantiated. So it's really in our interest to have our friends eat healthy, our friends to be active, our spouses and our siblings to be healthy. And it reflects on our risks of developing significant disease.
You know, when I think about it, I rarely see a couple where one of them is really in shape and the other one is really overweight. It's sometimes you see two really good-looking, in-shape people together, but more often you see a couple of people who, you're right, you know, when they go out to eat, they tend to eat the same sort of stuff. Hey, you know what, I'm going to get some ice cream. You know, the other ones go, all right, I'll get some ice cream too. And so they end up eating similarly.
Right, and they may, perhaps, if they go out, they're not going out for ice cream, they're going out for a walk. They'll share behaviors.
Yep.
So the point being, it is really in our interest as a society to encourage healthy behavior in our friends, in our relatives, our neighbors, our coworkers. And I think, you know, it's, like I say, it's a very sensitive issue, but I think we should do things like, instead of having coffee breaks, have exercise breaks, go for walks to clear our head rather than eat something. We should have healthy snack areas in hospitals and in businesses to try and encourage healthy eating behavior and healthy behavior in general. We've done that with cigarettes, and it's a sensitive issue with obesity, because 68% of the public's obese, and so many people are on diets, and so many people are trying to lose weight. But it's in our interest to try to encourage healthy behavior in all of us.
Now, some of the changes in smoking habits in this country came about because of impositions by private businesses. For instance, the office building where KTRS is located, you're not allowed to smoke in any of the offices here or out in the hallway or anywhere. They don't want to have to deal with changing the air filters more often and having that in the building and the fire risk and all of that. So as a private industry, the people who own this building have decided no smoking allowed in the building. And we have many, many, many public buildings like that in America, both public and private. But we also have had the government get involved. You mentioned earlier about taxes on cigarettes, which have probably had some effect, although I don't know how much of an effect it has had on smoking habits in this country. How does that work when you talk about obesity? What can a private business owner do? And should the government get involved here and start taxing fatty foods? Please say no.
Every time taxes have gone up on cigarettes, the number of people smoking goes down. So it does have an effect. When I see people in the office who quit smoking, one of the common reasons is they tell me it costs too much money. And we've taxed cigarettes, I don't buy them, but they're $8, $9 a pack, something of that order. And so you're talking people spending thousands of dollars a year.
Yep.
Several thousand dollars, and that's a lot of money people are spending on a habit that they know is unhealthy. And I think that does sort of make it pushes them over the edge. It makes them quit smoking. So it does have a beneficial effect on stopping smoking. I would also argue that the reason your building does not allow smoking is not because of anything rational. It's not because they're saving on taxes. It's because of social pressure, that buildings all over the country have stopped smoking because we've developed a social prejudice against smokers. We don't want to smell like cigarettes. We don't want cigarettes around us, and we have a respect for people who don't want to go home smelling like cigarettes. And we've made buildings cigarette free. I think the same kinds of things could be done initially on a voluntary basis by encouraging healthy snacks, not allowing coworkers to bring in donuts and pastries to the office. If they're going to bring in snacks, bring in apples or oranges, things that are healthy. And like I say, encouraging workers to walk, to get more exercise, and maybe subsidizing memberships in gyms, things of this sort, where we create an atmosphere of health rather than an atmosphere of unhealthiness at work.
But are you in favor of the government taxing pizza and cheeseburgers and soda?
I think there has to be some kind of government involvement. It becomes very sticky because what is healthy and what's not healthy. I think things clearly unhealthy like pastries and donuts and sodas and things of that sort, probably we should do something as far as making it more financially easier to buy healthy foods rather than unhealthy foods. But what it is it's a slippery slope, because a lot of people will say anything with processed products in it, anything with food additives is unhealthy, and I'm not sure that's really. We don't want to get into that because it opens too much of a door.
I think it's a very...
Certainly on a voluntary basis, we need to do something.
Yeah. I have no problem with people putting restrictions on themselves when it comes to what they eat. Or, if your boss says, if you're bringing in snacks, let's cut out this or that sort of thing. Or I like the idea of bosses subsidizing people doing more exercise or getting gym memberships or that sort of thing. I do draw the line, though, at government taxation, just in an effort to change behavior. I think that that's something, as a civil libertarian, that just drives me absolutely crazy. But I understand the motive behind it. It's just that I don't think that that's government's role.
Well, the government, as you know, Michelle Obama is getting very active with trying to promote healthy eating habits in children. And politics is the ability to separate what should be done and what can be done. And dealing with this on adults is so sensitive that they're trying to encourage healthy eating habits in children. But what we're going to do is we're going to lose a generation of adults who are 30% obese. We're going to say, look, we're going to forget about these people. We're going to allow them to get their diabetes and the heart disease and the kidney disease and try to just look at 30 years or 40 years in the future at the children. And I understand the political motives behind that, but I think we need to address the problems with adults right now.
Whatever happened to the President's Council on Physical Fitness? I remember that was a big deal when I was a kid. Is there still a President's Council on Physical Fitness?
I don't know, but I remember, I'm relatively old, but I remember when we were kids and we had to run a certain distance in a certain time and do these kinds of activities, and it was encouraged by the government. I don't know if they do that now in school.
See, that sort of thing I wouldn't have a problem with, but the other I would. But it's always a pleasure talking to you, Dennis. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Dennis Gottfried, a terrific spokesperson for all things medical. And if you want to read a terrific book on how we got into the health problems that we have in this country, read this book, Too Much Medicine, A Doctor's Prescription for Better and More Affordable Healthcare. I will put another link to it on my website, harrisonline.com. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Charles Jaco Show on the Big 550 KTRS.